Hello and welcome back to the KPMG Financial Reporting Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Tricarci, and today we are talking about the FASB's final ASU on disaggregation of income statement expenses, or as it's better known, DICE. But first, a quick content plug. We actually just published a really fantastic defining issues article, which has a ton of great detail about what's required under the new standard. So if you haven't read that, I'd recommend you pause this episode, go check it out real quick. You can find it on our FRV website, and we've also included a link to it in the episode description. And today I'm joined by the two authors of that wonderful article, Valerie Boisseau and Danny Zamora, two partners in our national office. Welcome to the podcast, guys.
Thanks, Nick. Glad to be here.
Glad to be here.
So this ASU is hot off the press, but for you guys, this is probably actually old news. I mean, you've been tracking it since the beginning. Danny, I think you've been following it since you were at the SEC. So what I want you to do today is empty out your notebooks for our listeners, but I don't want to get into the technical details of the ASU. People can read the defining issues for that. Instead, I want you to share what you're hearing from companies about why this is such a big deal and offer some practical advice on what people can do now to prepare. Does that sound good?
Yeah, I'm game.
All right. So I recently went to a training that was focused on improving communication. And one thing they taught us, which I liked a lot, is this term called bluff. Have you guys heard of this?
I have not, Nick.
No, I have not either.
I hadn't either, but it stands for bottom line up front. And it's focused on starting your messaging with the most important information first. So I figured we could practice that here. And Valerie, let me ask you, give me the bottom line up front as it relates to DICE.
Sure. So for me, the bottom line up front, this standard is a real game changer. In a nutshell, it requires new disclosures that break down certain income statement expenses into much greater detail than ever before.
Okay. And just to emphasize that real quick, Valerie, this isn't actually impacting the face of the income statement, right? It's just going to be presented in the notes.
Right. You're absolutely right on that. But I think it would be wrong to think of it of just a disclosure standard, which it is a disclosure standard. But the disclosure will fundamentally change how companies must think about and disclose their income statement expenses and explain their performance. Expenses like employee compensation and inventory purchases, depreciation, amortization will need to be broken down in ways that will expose the true cost structure of a business. And it's going to demand a huge shift in how companies report and tell their story.
Yeah. So, I mean, this sounds like investors are now going to get a peek under the hood, if you will. You know, instead of just seeing cost of goods sold as a single number, now they're going to get to see the individual pieces and parts that drive that cost. So I noticed this actually isn't going into effect until 2027. So why are we talking about it now?
That's a great question. And you're right. It won't take effect until 2027 for calendar year companies. But it's important that we start our conversations today because of the significant implementation challenges. The feedback from preparers during the makeup of the standard has highlighted just how complex this will be. Many companies don't actually currently track or manage their expenses in the natural expense categories required by the new standards. So gathering this information consistently across various systems or various business units, departments is going to be a huge task. Many preparers are concerned not only the technical aspects of gathering the data, like redesigning systems to capture and allocate costs correctly, but also just the time needed to develop meaningful insights from the data. To provide investors with a clear and accurate picture, I think companies will need to compare these new expense breakdowns over multiple periods, which means starting that analysis well before the effective date in reality.
Yeah, I think that last point is such a good one to make. I mean, investors are the ones who've been clamoring for this information. So they're going to be looking closely at this detail. And I'm guessing they're going to have questions, not just on 2027 data, but prior years as well. They're going to want to get their trend analysis and start projecting into the future. And so companies would be wise to get ahead of that by doing their own trend analysis, which really starts next year, I guess, if you think about it. So, all right, let's dive in a little deeper into why this is such a big deal. And obviously, a lot of people have done the play on words about rolling the dice, but I want to take it one step further and literally roll some dice on this podcast. And now I'm realizing I've talked about bluffing and now we're rolling dice. I promise you, this is not a gambling episode. But what I did was I assigned a different category to each number on the die. So if that number comes up when we roll it, I want one of you guys to tell me basically what's the most important takeaway somebody should have as it relates to that category. So here's what I've come up with. A one will be implementation challenges. Two will be things companies should do now to prepare. Three is how this could change the way companies actually communicate with investors. Four is how investors themselves might use this new information. Five will be the industries that are most likely to be impacted. And then six will be the income statement expenses most likely to be impacted. You guys game?
Let's go.
All right, let's go. So, all right, I'm going to roll the dice. Let's see what we get. All right, it's a six, income statement expenses. So, Danny, let me bring you in here. Tell me which ones are most likely to get disaggregated under this new rule.
Well, if I think about the prominent ones that are likely to be impacted, you're looking at captions like cost of goods sold, SG&A, research and development expenses, or at least similarly named expenses.
And why those ones, Danny?
Well, just think about what the standard requires, right? It requires an expense caption to be disaggregated if it contains one of those prescriptive categories that Valerie just talked about. And so because of that, right, those expense captions I threw out have the highest likelihood of containing at least one of those prescriptive categories. So I'll give you a quick example of how this looks. If you look at cost of goods sold, right, it probably includes things like inventory purchases, depreciation, comp, perhaps some others too. And then likewise, if you drill into SG&A, it typically includes things like employee compensation costs or depreciation and amortization.
Okay, so it sounds like really any type of operating expense is a good candidate for disaggregation under this new standard. And you know, if I were a company that had to implement this, step one for me would probably be figuring out which line items are going to need to be disaggregated and then go from there. Would you say you agree with that?
I would tend to agree with that for sure. I think that companies will first have to pinpoint where those prescribed expense categories like inventory purchases, employee comp, depreciation are embedded. And I think that that will then be coupled with a robust gap analysis that involves comparing how expenses are currently tracked and allocated versus what the new standard is going to require. So for many, I think this is where the real challenge begins, where the rubber meets the road, because they'll need to assess where existing data falls short of the new standard and then identify the changes to be able to bridge that gap.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think we'll probably hit on some of those points in more detail based on what comes up on the die, which speaking of which, I'm ready to roll it again. All right, this time it came up with a five, Valerie. So that takes us to industries. Tell me, which industries do we think are likely to have the biggest challenges implementing this new standard?
Well, to be honest, all industries are going to be significantly impacted by the new standard, given there is no scope out and systems and data challenges that we mentioned earlier. But that being said, I think the biggest challenge will be felt by companies that carry inventory. Manufacturing, of course, will be heavily impacted, but so will industries like retail, life sciences, aerospace and defense, utilities, energy sectors, everywhere where you have complex supply chains and numerous cost centers will complicate the disaggregation process.
All right, let's talk about inventory for a minute. Can you explain why this is so complicated?
The complexity around inventory comes down to how costs are tracked or reported. When costs like materials, labor, depreciation are capitalized as inventory, they tend to lose their natural classification, as you probably know, making it very tricky to identify the nature of those costs later on.
Yeah, so you're basically saying if we were to look at a company's GL right now, we'd probably just see one total amount for finished goods, for example, and one total amount for product costs within cost of goods sold, but you wouldn't know how much of that is materials versus labor versus overhead. And now the standard is going to force companies to break it down to that level of detail.
Exactly. And preparers were very vocal with the FASB during the makeup of the standard about how difficult this would be. And so to soften the blow in a certain way, the FASB decided to allow companies to disaggregate inventory related costs using two possible approaches. So one is called the cost incurred method, and the other one is the expense incurred method.
Yeah, and this was a change from the proposed ASU, right? And I'm still a little confused, honestly, about what the difference is. Can you just tell me what is cost incurred versus expense incurred?
Sure. Yeah, that's probably one of the most difficult piece to comprehend. So high level, the cost incurred approach is focused on only on those costs incurred during the period, regardless of whether they actually hit the P&L in that period, whereas the expense incurred method is focused on what actually hit the P&L in the current period, even if those costs were incurred in prior periods. So I hope that brings a little clarity.
I think so. Let me give you an example to see if I follow what you just said. And I'm going to just keep it super simple. You know, let's say I'm a startup company. I have no operations. During the year, I buy $100 worth of inventory. And then in that same year, I sell 80 of it. So there's still 20 sitting in my inventory, right? Under the cost incurred approach, I would report $100 in this new disclosure for purchases of inventory, even though only 80 of that actually was recognized in my income statement as cost of goods sold. But if I follow the expense incurred approach, I'd only show 80 as inventory purchases. Do I have that right?
Absolutely, Nick. You got it.
I'll be honest. This is probably the most I've talked about inventory in like the last 5 years. So I'm personally ready to move on here and give this dice another roll. So, all right, it's a one. Danny, let me come back to you and talk about implementation challenges. And here's my question. If you were in charge of implementing this new standard, what would be keeping you up at night?
Well, look, if I'm being real with you and just to ground that question, the whole standard's already keeping me up at night. But, you know, if I was in charge of this, I'd probably be thinking about the data and systems first, right, Nick? Think about that. For many companies, current systems just aren't set up to capture expenses with this level of granularity that this standard requires. So there's going to be a need for some serious upgrades. And what that really boils down to is you can't disaggregate what you don't track. And so to build off of what Valerie mentioned earlier, this isn't just an issue for manufacturing companies. Almost every industry in this case is going to face challenges because the standard compels companies to really identify and separate costs that were previously grouped together. And so many businesses today, they just don't have that system to track these elements in isolation, especially once they're capitalized, right? So, you know, adapting to this change will mean significant upgrades to data systems and tracking mechanisms across the board, regardless of whether a company holds large inventories or produces physical goods.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking, you know, for companies out there that have some of these legacy systems that maybe haven't been updated for a while, or it's grown through acquisition, and so there's actually many different ERPs within this operation, this could be quite the effort to go in and now extract this information. You know, that's either going to be manual effort or, like you said, Danny, you know, making a significant investment in technology. Not only to get the data, but to make sure it's accurate. I mean, this is going to go in the financial statements now, and so it'll be subject to audit.
Oh, absolutely. And on top of those challenges, right, you also have to think about the operational side of it. Some of the, what I'll call tag-along consequences that people haven't thought about yet of implementing this ASU means retraining their employees, revisiting accounting policies, processes, controls, maybe even reconsidering how costs are allocated. So if you truly take a step back, and if you think about everything we just said, the reality is this isn't just an accounting change. It's going to require a full-scale transformation of how companies think about their expenses.
Yeah, I was actually just in an audit committee recently, and this was a topic that they wanted to discuss because they're in the middle of a big transformation project. You know, they're implementing a new ERP across the whole company, and they wanted to understand what data was going to be required from this standard. And I thought it was a great conversation because the last thing you want to do is implement a brand new technology and realize it's not going to be set up to capture this information, and then you got to go do some more work to comply with the standard. But Danny, what about companies that are not going through a finance transformation, or quite frankly, they don't want to simply because of these new requirements? What would you say to them?
Well, I think that's where estimates and other methods like allocation methods come into play. What the FASB essentially clarified in the final ASU is that companies can, in fact, and you know, to be frank with you, similar to other areas of GAAP, use estimates and other methods to meet the objective of DICE. So that's definitely another way of doing it. But I still think that it's going to be challenging to figure out how to do this because no matter how you spin this and what approach you end up taking, it still has to be done in a reasonable, supportable, and auditable manner.
Yeah, I feel like that might raise some more questions, particularly on the audit side. But I guess we'll save that for a different discussion. I'm ready to give this dice another roll and keep the conversation going. All right, it's a two, which brings us to preparation. So Valerie, let me come back to you and piggybacking off what Danny just said, you know, what advice would you give companies on what they should be doing now to prepare for the ASU?
Yeah, so building off what Danny mentioned earlier, I think it starts with a robust gap analysis that compares how companies track their costs today versus what's going to be necessary tomorrow. So, you know, very simply, it starts with looking at the income statement, figuring out what are the relevant captions and what costs need to be disaggregated. But then it's understanding what are the tracking system, what are the accounting policies for allocating costs today, and perhaps reorganizing how certain costs are captured across departments and allocated. So there is definitely some steps to be taken now and deep diving into the cost system of the company.
I think that's great advice. And I mean, just listening to you guys, this seems like a cross-functional project. You know, I'm thinking accounting, obviously, IT, procurement, probably a lot more depending on what industry you're in. And so making sure the right departments are involved is probably also a key part of this for companies as they start their journey. And then, you know, like you said, Valerie, communicating and educating other stakeholders where this information is going to be relevant. You know, auditors, we've talked about, investors, we're going to talk about, the board, you know, all of that before the rules go live so that everybody's on the same page as to what's coming and how to communicate that information. All right, let's roll again. And this time, all right, we got a three here, which brings us to how companies might communicate that information. How about that? So Valerie, I'm going to keep it with you. And, you know, in my mind, obviously this is going to require a lot more information to be provided, but that doesn't always mean better communication, in my opinion. So what are some things companies should be thinking about and how to effectively communicate this new expense detail that's going to be required?
Yeah, that's a tricky question. We alluded to that. But one thing I want to clarify that we heard through the making of the ASU is that many companies do not manage their business based on the expense categories prescribed by the FASB, right? So not every company uses natural expense categories to manage their business. So once the data will be available, I imagine that companies will need to take the time to digest the information, understand how the trends are forming, and how the new information interacts with the existing information that's already provided to investors within the financial statements, but also outside the financial statements. So, you know, companies may benefit from understanding how those expenses build up and how they compare across periods, and they want to really do their homework before they share this information externally. I think also, you know, the companies need to work around how the information will be received and understood from investors. So perhaps they need to work on a how-to guide, like almost providing instructions for reading the information. I'll give you two examples of that. For instance, explaining how the amounts of purchase of inventory relate to revenue. Like in the example that you gave, Nick, you know, there is an instance where the purchase of inventory number will be 100, which is just what has been purchased in the period. It's got no relation to how much was sold in the period, which would be the revenue number. So explaining that to investors, I think will go a long way. Another case would be explaining how the total of amount of employee compensation disclosed relate to the number of FTEs disclosed in MD&A. Again, you know, these two pieces of information may not necessarily intuitively work together, and that may raise questions from investors. And I think companies need to get ahead of those questions and really get prepared to answer them.
Again, great advice. I mean, I didn't mention investor relations earlier, but they seem like another really important stakeholder in this whole process. Like getting them up to speed in advance of actually releasing these numbers seems like it could be a huge opportunity for companies to shape the narrative and highlight some of the positive aspects of this new data. We spent a lot of time talking about the challenges, but it seems like there's a lot of opportunities as well. And so on that, like Valerie, do you think we might actually see companies change some of the materials they use for things like earnings calls and investor presentations once this comes out?
I think so. Perhaps not something we're going to see in year one, but I think, you know, as the information sink in, it's very probable that companies will have to adjust to the new information and the new questions that they're going to get from the investor community.
Okay. Yeah. All the more reason to get ready now. Okay. We got one last roll. Let's see if I can get a four here. And it's a four. Maybe I should go to Vegas. I don't know. Danny, we talked about company's communication plan just now, right? But what's your perspective on how investors themselves are likely to use this new information?
So investors want to understand not just how much companies were spending, but what they were spending it on. And so how those costs might behave in the future is really important for them. So for example, like, are expenses mostly fixed or do they vary with production levels? Are companies investing more in technology or cutting back on labor, right? So I think also that this might become even more important in periods of economic uncertainty where investors want to see how a company manages their expenses. And these are the types of insights that the old income statement just wasn't providing. So going forward, investors are now going to be able to analyze more detailed information about expenses and their cost structures that they believe are critically important to a company's performance. They're going to be able to run trends on those numbers. They're going to be able to compare their performance over time with that of other companies. So what that means is companies should really start thinking about today and start anticipating questions they may get from investors and analysts and get a plan in place for providing those types of responses.
Yeah, I mean, I'm already starting to see how this could be useful for spotting trends or potentially some red flags that might have been hidden in those big aggregated numbers in the past. You know, let's say a company's raw material cost keeps going up, but they're not raising prices. Could be a sign that margins are getting squeezed, or say employee comps going up faster than revenue growth. Maybe that means the company's being less efficient. I would think these and probably many other questions are things companies should expect from their investors.
Exactly. That's exactly right. So with all this added transparency, investors can potentially predict future performance a lot more accurately. Think about the questions they're now going to be able to ask. Trends within specific expense categories, cost drivers, how all of that is ultimately impacting profitability and management's decision-making process.
Yeah, lots of questions, lots of detailed questions, right? The more detailed information, the more detailed the questions. So speaking of questions, I've got one last one for you guys before we wrap up. Basically, any parting thoughts you want to share with folks? Danny, let me start with you.
I'd start by saying don't underestimate the impact of this change. I already told you this is a standard that's keeping me up at night. The level of detail the FASB is asking for is absolutely going to require a new way of thinking about financial reporting. Start early, communicate often. Also, make sure you got the right people involved, which you alluded to, Nick, right? Whether it's IT, accounting, investor relations, the auditor should definitely have a seat at that table. And then also remember, this isn't just about compliance. It's an opportunity to provide more meaningful information to your stakeholders. So try to embrace that.
I would also say it's a significant change. Don't just think about the CSU as just a data and disclosure exercise. It's a real opportunity to enhance the quality of financial reporting and start now, get ahead of your financial performance story and build trust with your investors community.
Great advice, as always. I mean, from listening to you guys, these are my takeaways. One, don't wait. Two, if you have inventory, then really don't wait. Three, you probably want to start with that data gap analysis that you both talked about. To me, that seems like it's going to create the roadmap for implementing this thing. You know, it's going to help identify where the data is coming from, who's going to need to be involved, and whether your current IT systems are going to be up to par to comply. So, all right, with that, thank you so much to both of you for joining and, you know, like I said, emptying your notebooks for all of our listeners.
Thanks for having us, Nick. We really appreciate it being here.
Yeah, great being here. Thanks.
Thank you for listening. And if you enjoyed this episode, which I hope you did, please give us 5 stars and make sure you subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you listen to podcasts. We've got some really great content coming up that you will not want to miss. And in the meantime, you can check out our website at frv.kpmg.us. We've got some really great materials on whatever financial reporting topic you're interested in. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.